Welcome to the Take 92 podcast. This is Sammy Warmhands. My guest today is KI Design from The Architects. You may also know him as the producer, beatmaker, extraordinaire from my album Famous Last Words. And he's joining us today to talk about the anniversary of The Architects' weekly showcase here in Eugene, celebrating its fourth anniversary, September 2nd. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Yar.
What's the podcast called? Take 92 Podcast?
Or yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't have a name for it when we started, and I was like, yeah.
Take 92 Podcast.
It works. Why not?
I fucking just came up with that. That's awesome.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coin.
I haven't been using that
at
all.
I'm sure you haven't.
Nope.
I wouldn't know because I don't pay attention.
I actually made a Venn diagram today because I feel like I have so much stuff going on that people who are even casually interested might not be able to keep up.
Yeah.
And so it was like just groups of, like, here's all the things that are free to you. Here's the things that cost you money. And like, here's the shit that's a little bit of both.
Nice.
Because even I can't keep up with this shit anymore. But
yeah, I was just talking to somebody saying I have too many hobbies. Like, it's getting to the point where it's like, I think it's like a disorder. Like, I have to be doing something or I go fucking crazy, but I'm going crazy from doing everything too.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
Yeah, me and Cross talked about that on the first episode that was just kind of like, it's, you could be so much happier not pursuing doing all these things.
Yeah.
And not having all that stress and possibly disappointment if it doesn't work out or whatever. And constantly being, you know, dissatisfied that, like, oh, I'm stuck at work when I should be working on my record and whatever.
Yeah.
You'd be so much happier without all that shit in your life. But there's not really a choice.
Yeah, but would you?
It's just, for us, it's just in us, you know?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. That's why I started pursuing comedy a little more, too, is because, like, I can't be a 40-year-old unsuccessful white rapper, but I can do that as a comedian. That is completely okay.
That's true, yeah.
But, like, Snoop Dogg is, you know, you can watch a 50-year-old black guy rap, but if you watch a 50-year-old white guy, it gets pretty depressing.
I remember when Eminem was in a battle, Benzino, maybe? Yeah, he had a line that was like, I'm pushing 30, you're kicking 40's door down.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I see Eminem and I just think of that line. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I see him now and I'm like, remember,
making fun of somebody,
remember when you said that?
Making fun of somebody for their age is crazy because you're going to get there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's really just a joke that's meant for you.
Unless you're like terminally ill or something and then go for it. But otherwise. So, hey, yeah, this is the Take 92 podcast. We didn't officially start, really, but hey, this is Sammy Warmhands. We got KI Design in the studio today.
Hello.
Member of the Architects, host of every show that you've ever seen.
In Eugene.
In this town, yep.
And some in San Jose, every once in a while.
Yeah. You went down there recently, right?
Yeah. I did the Kill a Priest show not that long ago.
That's right, that's right. Yeah. And you had a battle where...
In Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Guy no-showed, yeah.
That's lame.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm always interested to see your battles, though, because they're funny as hell.
Yeah, but I'm less interested in battling than I think the people watching are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't follow it, really, but when you do,
it's the
when
homie,
you do them, I look for them, you know, because...
Thanks.
I know it's going to be funny. A lot of times it's just so monotonous. It's just like the same.
All I do is talk about guns, though. gun talk.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I did have you here for a reason. We're actually going to bump the order of things a little bit. I had a Gradient here last night, and we did the third episode.
Cool.
But I wanted to get you on first.
Okay.
We'll get into some of that stuff later. I feel like most people know you as an MC. They see you on the front of the stage. Over the last couple of years, though, you've really been focusing on production, right?
Yeah, making beats a lot, loops and stuff like that, which I did a little bit when I was younger. I just didn't have the money to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So as I got more rooted in Eugene and started making more money to where I could afford the devices and the records and everything like that, I got heavier into it. And as I've gotten older, I've had less opinions, and less opinions means less things to write about. Less things to write about means less rap music, means make some fucking beats.
Okay. Yeah. So sometimes it's not as much about saying something as you just enjoy the creative process.
I enjoy conveying feelings as opposed to conveying messages. I feel like messages and metaphors like can get really sloppy and in the box. Like, yeah, I feel like when people are too conceptual, it seems a little forced and easy, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm the type of guy where, like, in school, if somebody said, if a teacher said, you know, write 9 paragraphs about slavery, I'm like, I could sum it up in 1, you know?
I was the opposite. I would always be like, give me a limit.
Yeah.
I will write as much as you can handle.
I've always taken to heart the Einstein quote of like, if you can't say it simply, you don't understand it well enough.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I write a verse, I'm like, well, there's your intro, your body, your conclusion. And then like everything after that is just reiterating what I already said. And okay, at that point it's like, now I'm just beating a dead horse.
I've had people say that to me before, that sometimes with a conceptual track, they're really focused on a verse.
Yeah.
And then kind of want to get somebody else on the next one because they've said all they need to say.
Yeah. I think when I heard Mocha Only say it once, he was like, yeah, I don't really have a structure for writing a song. I just like write till I'm done, and then I'm done, and I don't really care if it's not barred out right or anything. And I really respect that. And I feel it's kind of the same way with like MF Doom and stuff like that, where it's like, I like that style where I'd rather take 19 metaphors to convey one feeling than take one metaphor, but like, okay, my life's a boat. Well, the work is a mass and is an anchor holding me back. And you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. And then it's just like, okay, that's fucking easy. That's so fucking easy. And it's like, I don't know. It just seems really sloppy. I'd rather like people not really know what it's about until they put all the pieces together. Like, it was like when I was younger and I listened to a lot of Sage Francis, I would catch things like years later.
Yeah, I still do.
Yeah. And yeah, you'd be like, whoa. Okay, like he was fucking saying something there.
And you can do that by different ways. Yeah. Like a lot of the people that rap really fast, there's so much packed in there that sure, you'll listen to it 100 times and never get everything out of there. And then there's other times where you're maybe using a common phrase, you know, in some other way, or they didn't catch your reference or something like that. The first couple times.
Or they just haven't seen what it's referencing. Like,
yeah.
If it's a movie reference,
if you're watching
or something,
a movie and
like,
you see
oh,
that.
Oh, shit, it clicks now.
Yeah. You know? I've had people hit me up like years after an album came out and be like, dude,
yeah,
I saw the thing you sampled.
I get a lot of people who will like approach me, like Claw Marks was like a popular, I wrote that like when I was 16, and it was still till this day is like one of the more popular songs in the
Is that the one with the you told me?
Yeah, yeah, and people really like that one, and they'll always go, oh, it's about this, it's about that, it's about, and it's literally about nothing. Like, it's, and so many people, like, my songs sort of flesh out as I write them, you know? Like, my feeling when I'm writing dictates what I'm writing, no matter what, whether I'm trying to or not, you know?
For sure.
So, like, what I've come to find that song to be about is more about, like, growing up and realizing that nobody is inherently good or evil. It's just like you told me I was like an angel. You told me. Hey, yeah. We're not. No one's a fucking angel. You know what I mean? Like, angels don't even exist, or do they? You know. So it's like it's more like absurdity in song form, which I feel like 90% of my songs are about, how nothing means anything. And
well,
it's awesome.
That's interesting too, because on stage, your persona is very, I don't know, playful, super funny, usually aggressive with the humor, and the, a lot of stuff that you do with your group, The Architects, is a lot of punchlines and wordplay and stuff like that. So when I hear your solo work, and it's more like what you're saying now, I think people may not, I mean, not that you don't do solo sets,
sure,
but I think it probably would come as a surprise when you dig into some of that stuff, that it's a lot different than what people might expect.
I feel like anytime you're in a group with multiple like MCs or singers or somebody writing something, not just doing the music, you're going to have conflicting viewpoints and conflicting backgrounds. So you have to sacrifice content for something. And I feel like with the Architects, something we can all commonly agree on is clever wordplay and fun wit and stuff like that. When you have a six-person group, you're not going to write about politics, because my politics are much different than everyone else's in the group. And the way I feel about existence is much different than everyone's in the group, you know? So that's why I feel like when I make music with Eb, it's more geared towards that, because we have a similar, like, kind of like snarky, cynical outlook on life. But like with Brendan and Marshall, they don't necessarily feel that way. They're like, yeah, life is good and we're out enjoying ourselves and we're making money and having a good time, you know? Yeah. So if we wrote songs, it would just be like, or with Undermine, he'd be like, yeah, raves are fun. And I'd be like, no, they're fucking stupid, you know? So
and then you wind up with a gimmick in and of itself.
Yeah. And I like that we're all ourselves, but when we come together as a unit, we just find common ground and stick to that, which is like, I don't care what anybody says. Not every song has to be a potential for like social change or like even to influence anybody's lives in a positive way. Some of it can just be fun. And yeah. I think some people look at that as like it's easy. And like I said, some people look at the other stuff like it's easy and it's who cares? Just do what you like. And there's room for it all. I mean, me and the guys in the group are vastly different, but I can accept them for who they are and they accept me. And we can find a common ground with just being funny and witty and having a good time.
And you're really good at it. I think that one thing that the group dynamic brings out of you guys is, because I've seen everybody's solo sets or side projects and whatever.
Right.
And one thing that you see when everyone's together is that you're kind of trying to one-up each other.
Yeah.
And so everybody, even though your songs are more on one lane, it's like really, really sharp.
Right.
And so you're getting, you know, 5-6 verses sometimes, and that could be a really monotonous, boring song.
Yeah.
But everybody is so
different.
Yeah, it's the diversity as well as the fact that everyone's trying to one up the guy who came before them.
Right.
Makes for a really interesting flow.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The hooks are fun, so it doesn't drag.
Yeah, and a lot of the times if we've come to learn that like we do a lot of songs that are in pairs of three, pairs of two, or we'll do like if we do all six on a song, we'll each do an eight as opposed to, you know, you'll take the Jurassic 5 approach because it can get monotonous. Not necessarily if you're listening to it on a CD or a record or whatever, but if you're live, it can get to be a little, which I find weird because like people go to like Grateful Dead shows and shit and that is the same jam band shit for 12 hours. It's fucking nuts. And,
or people do like a 30-minute doom metal song.
Right. But I think with hip-hop, people don't separate each MC because they go, oh, they're rapping. It's like if I come out and play an electric guitar and I come out and play the flamenco, you're not going to go, oh, this is so monotonous. It's just the guitar, you know?
Well, I think there's an important difference because you mentioned earlier that sometimes you make beats because you're getting that mood across as opposed to getting a direct message across. Yeah. When you're listening to rap as opposed to any instrument or instrumental, it's not just the tone of voice and the rhythm and all of that, but you're also having to digest what they're saying the whole time. So it's more active listening, I think.
Right. And it's like a band full of frontmen where like if you just don't like the guy, it doesn't matter what they're saying at that point. Because I've had people be like, yeah, you're good. I just don't like you. So they don't support it, you know, and vice versa. Like we always like whenever we do a huge set together, we'll sit down and be like, oh, that was your night tonight. People were loving you. Oh, that was your night tonight. People were loving
you. I've seen that.
And it always varies and it's always really surprising, you know, like people will come up like Justin Bieber's mom. Fucking, you never heard this story?
Maybe I did.
So we were at Lucky's dead. It's a Wednesday night, you know, it was dead and it was a weekly. So obviously that's bound to happen every once in a while. And we're doing the set, and this lady is there, and she's playing pool, and she's loving it. She's fucking loving it. And it was a night that Brendan Cerebral was not there because he had diarrhea. So like we did like literally like 6 minutes of diarrhea freestyles about why Brendan couldn't be there because no one was there, so we didn't give a shit. And we're just freestyling about diarrhea and just bowel movements like for 6 minutes. And then afterwards, we get off stage, and this lady walks up to Eb and goes, "You are fucking great." And he's like, "Thank you." And she was like, "No, I hate hip hop. And you are fucking amazing." And Ed was like, oh man, thank you. And she's like drunk, obviously. And she grabs him by the arm and she leans into his ear and she goes, I don't tell anybody, but I'm Justin Bieber's mom. Obviously, he right away comes and tells me. And I was like, no, it's not. I Google Justin Bieber's mom, put the phone up to her face, like right there, and it's fucking Justin Bieber's mom. Like, her nose is crooked. She looks like she's been in like a Golden Gloves match or something, you know? Like, she looks fucked up, but it was funny. And like, all we did was freestyle about diarrhea, and she loved Ebb. She just loved Ebb. Like, no one else.
That's pretty great.
She could have done without the rest of us.
Speaking of some of the humor, because you guys sometimes just have hilarious ciphers on those slow nights.
Yeah.
Sometimes those are my favorite nights to watch you guys because you really let all guard down and just whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And it's always hilarious.
I feel like we don't take ourselves that seriously.
Yeah. So you're doing stand-up sets now.
Yes.
How did that start?
Well, I've done them before. I used to host a burlesque show in town.
Yeah.
And that was more stage time than anything I've ever done. It was like the girls would come out and do 2 minutes of dancing at the most. And then I was between each girl for like 5 minutes while they were prepping everything. So doing that, the guys that ran the burlesque show saw me host a hip hop show and they're like, you're funny. You should do the burlesque show. And I was like, you know, I've never done it. So I don't know. And they're like, just be mean. And I was like, okay. So I got up there and the first
just be mean.
And I don't think they realized what they unleashed when they said that, you know, because
these are the John Henry's shows.
Yeah. This was at John Henry's.
So that's like 2010 ish, something like that.
Yeah. 11? I hosted the show for like 2 years. It was probably like 2010 to 2012, 2013.
Okay.
And I did that a lot. I did it every Sunday, you know, so.
And they just said let loose. And
they just said let loose. And then they eventually told me to tone it back.
Really?
Yeah. Like the girls especially. Like I always used to tell people to tip them in back to school supplies and baby formula to cut the middleman out. One time I was an old lady like got up and was heckling me for saying something ignorant, like didn't understand the context or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just went, excuse me, can somebody tell their leather couch to sit the fuck down, please? And they, like the people that run John Henry started getting texts like, who the fuck is this asshole? Blah, 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 blah.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so I had to tone that back a little bit, basically making fun of the girls that were dancing. But I was like, I made fun of myself more than anybody.
Sure, yeah. You know? I mean, I've seen you host other shows where if somebody isn't ready or whatever, you're just heckling the crowd. You're shitting on yourself. You're shitting on the clown-haired guy standing next to you, which is generally me.
You. I rip on you every time I introduce you. I rip on everybody, though. It's like,
great.
I think people can identify with self-deprecation because I think one of the things about hip-hop is its ego, and more now than ever, people are less attracted to ego, you know? Like they do it because they love to hate it, you know? Like Kanye and people like that. But the self-deprecating people, like Louis C.K. and things like that. So if you can take, like, the art of hip hop and mix it with like the realness of like being insecure and weird. Cause I think everyone's insecure. I think the difference is like courageous people get up and do it anyway, you know?
Yeah. You can own it or you can wallow. Some sort of disguise.
And as a rapper, you're up there going, look at me, look at me, look at me. And then like in between sets, you're allowed to like kind of show people who you really are because like, hip hop and rapping for me is an exaggerated sense of self. I don't unsolicitedly give my opinions to most people.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to you because I do it to you all the time. But I don't do that a lot. Like if you don't ask me my opinion on something, I'm not that likely to give it to you. So when you walk into a show and you're really not there to see me, you're just there because it's a bar or whatever. A lot of the times, you know,
and that's what you get for a weekly kind of traffic. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like you don't get to connect with the person through song as much as everything else. And I feel like some of the best performers in the world, hip hop or no, are really funny in between sets. Whether it's like awkward or it's like, almost so flamboyant that you're just laughing at them anyway, and you're kind of...
Yeah. Idea was like that. Yeah. I remember he had borderline, like, stand-up shit he would just bust into.
When we were in the back room with him, he told me he was, like, venturing into a comedy, and I told him a couple of my jokes. That, nice. And he was like, yeah, those are funny, you know? Like, I told him the crocodile joke and all that shit. And yeah, so the thing about comedy is I've been watching comedy, and my brothers are some of the funniest people I've ever known. They're, like, stand-up comics without ever performing, so... But being with that and just having the courage to go out there and be insecure in front of people and stuff, I think it was just a natural transition. And I think it's douchey to say, I think I should do comedy. So I never did, you know?
Yeah.
And it was more people that would see my hip hop shows and would come up and go, you should do comedy. You should do comedy. You should do comedy. But I never took them seriously because I don't want to be that guy that's like, everyone at the office says I should do comedy, you know?
Sure.
But after a while, I was like, okay, I'm getting numerous people telling me that I'm funny, so I should just try to do it. And a lot of the times I'm not funny, but that's comedy, you know?
I like sometimes, I remember specifically when we were on tour together.
Yeah.
And you had this joke where you're like, when I say hip, y'all say hop, hip, hop, hip, hop. And then you had a couple things that rhyme, and you're like, and Michael Jackson was the king of... And they got the rhyme in their head, so they're going to say pop. And so they say pop, and you say, nope, pedophilia, nice try.
Yeah,
you know, most successful pedophile
Seattle
to ever live.
Like that.
And we did that in Seattle, and the room just got cold.
Yeah.
It was dead silent.
Yeah.
Not, like, no booze.
No, it was just awkward.
It was just like, like everyone's having a good time and laughing, and then just, like, totally too far. And I love watching... a performer, I mean a comedian in general, but like any kind of performer, find that line and cross it
and then
try to win them back over.
Yeah. Which I feel like we did in the end.
Definitely.
Yeah, we got them back. But yeah. I think the thing about comedy is unless you're going somewhere expecting to see comedy, you're just an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going to a bar expecting to play pool and you see some guy on a microphone making social commentary, they're not going to laugh the same way as if they were in a nightclub that's a comedy club and they're going there to see a comedian.
Yeah, when you're there to laugh, sometimes you're already giggling at the setup.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a totally different environment.
Well, and that's like, most of the comedy that I did here, being that there's not a lot of comedy clubs, was at like bars. So it was at like burlesque shows or doing hip hop shows or whatever I was doing. And now there's a comedy club. So on Thursdays, at like 8:30, I go down there and sign up, and I've been doing it, and I've been getting like applause breaks and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, which is like huge for me because usually it's me trying to like, the only reason I started doing it was to make people come up to listen to hip hop, and now they're just there to listen to me talk, which is a very weird transition. It's the most fucking like nerve-wracking thing on the planet.
I can imagine.
It is nerve-wracking, and I've credit myself for having nerves of steel. I really don't give a shit about most things.
And you perform every single week.
All the time. For years.
Often as a solo artist, only guy on stage.
Yeah.
But it's still totally different.
So different. And the thing is, you don't have to like somebody's hip-hop to recognize them for being good.
Sure.
If you're a comedian and you're not funny, you're no longer a comedian.
Yeah.
You can be a bad rapper and still be a rapper. You can't be a bad comedian because the thing that makes it comedy is that it's funny. If it's not funny, then you're just talking. So it's weird. It's like a very weird art form that like ceases to be itself. If it just
turns into a TED talk if you're not. Yeah.
You just turn into an asshole with a microphone who thinks he's funny. And there's nothing worse than a person who thinks they're funny that is not funny. Everyone hates that. You have that guy at work who's telling jokes, and you're just like, shut the fuck up.
Yes.
Imagine being that guy at, like, an open mic. It's nerve-wracking. And it's going to happen. You're going to bomb. People aren't going to like you, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be... Actually, I can think of... Recently, I did a show. I did two shows back-to-back. Eugene and Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the song in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was my Redefine the Flow, the remix that
the
I just
RA
did.
The RA one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's super lyrical, and like I do the whole first verse, and it's just super dense, and then I stop the beat, and I do the second verse, which is a lot more jokes and stuff, a cappella, slow it down so people can react to it and really sell the punchlines. And they are just losing control laughing in Salem. And like at one point, one of the DJs walks on stage, grabs the mic from me, and he's like, "Oh my God, give it up for this man!" Yeah. You know, like, yeah. And I was halfway through the verse, and so like, you know, they're cheering. He gives it back, mm-hmm. and I keep going, and it was just great.
Yeah.
And then the next night, hometown show, and just crickets. Like nobody gave a flying fuck. I'm like, really?
Eugene is notoriously a very bad town for humor. Notoriously, like
I don't know if I knew that because I'm from here.
All the comedians that I work with here, that I do shows with and stuff, are like, that joke would have killed anywhere else when I say something, because people are so.
Is it too PC or is it?
It's white guilt. It's okay. It's a bunch of. This is a very racist state. It was for a really long time.
Yeah.
And Eugene and Portland have redefined themselves and as being extremely liberal. They're like the Austin, Texases in Texas.
Yeah.
So anything even remotely misogynist. Or racist, or anything that pokes at anything other than middle class white people, it gets very tense. They can't allow themselves to laugh because they're like, "No, we don't."
Is this okay?
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you tell a joke about black people in New York around black people, they're gonna be like, "Oh, funny ass white boy." Yeah. Here, white people are gonna get mad. You know how many times I've heard like a white guy say the N-word, and before the black guy can even react, a bunch of white people are already like, "No." It's like, let the dude stand up for himself, you fucking white, guilt-ridden motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, you're not even allowing him to defend himself.
I'm trying to think of the special that it was. Whose special it was. I heard, did a black joke and got a big reaction.
Yeah.
And then he had a follow-up joke, and then he's like, wait a second. He goes, I didn't really think this is kind of a white audience tonight. He's like, "Are there?" He's like, "Do I have some black friends in the crowd?" And like, people started cheering. Yeah. And he's like, "All right, cool." Because this was like a stone's throw away from a Klan rally there for a second.
Yeah. But the thing about comedy is, it's like you have to laugh at the things that make you uncomfortable. It's like that age old: you laugh because you don't want to cry. You know.
And that's what it's best for.
That's what it. And what is PC humor? I'd like to know. What is humor where nobody is offended?
Yeah.
It's not humor. It's not humor anymore.
It's so popsicle sticks jokes. That's what it is. And it's even slappy, those happy.
I mean, if you get rid of humor as we know it today, eventually they'll find something like that to be offended by. The nature of like, especially the American public, is like they romanticize oppression and like they want to be oppressed so bad that they will create it where there is none because. That's what we were bred from. You know what I mean? Like, we were oppressed by the British, and then the Irish were oppressed, and so it's like, guess what? Everyone's oppressed in one way or another, or repressed or whatever. And if you can't laugh at the oppression, it's never going to change. Because, like, when you laugh at something, you're going, this is so fucking stupid. It's ignorant, you know? So if somebody says something ignorant and you laugh at it, you're validating its ignorance as opposed to, like, people think laughter is agreement. It's not agreement. It's like, wow, that was fucking ignorant. You know what I mean? Like Daniel Tosh. When you watch Daniel Tosh and he says something ignorant, nobody's laughing because they agree. When you agree with something, you go, when somebody says something profoundly stupid, what do? You laugh.
Yeah.
You know, you laugh at him. You go, what a fucking idiot.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And when you know the person is being intentionally ignorant, that's funny. That's comedy, you know? And people are just, they don't want to offend anyone. And the trick to not offending anyone is to not get offended. It's not to stop saying offensive things.
Yeah. And also, when you are in an environment like that where people kind of have their guards down, they're also more willing to accept ideas that you couldn't have talked about in another forum.
Absolutely
without
not.
Without turning off everybody in the room.
Yep.
You know, like if you get into, like you were saying, a super political statement in a song or something like that, it's just like, oh, okay, buddy.
Quit preaching to me.
Yeah. But if you were like, you know, I grew up on George Carlin. He was really the first comedian I was
also
ever
very shocky.
Exposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he had a lot of big ideas in the stuff. And
He's
he was always making you laugh.
Yeah.
But also, every time taking you another step into his worldview.
It's very dark.
Yeah.
It's extreme. Sometimes it's uncomfortable to talk about things that are dark. And if you bring humor to it, it makes it easier to talk about. it's easier to laugh at something than it is to honestly discuss it, but at least it gets the spark going, you know? And the greatest thing about comedy is you can fall back and go, oh, it's just joking, you know? Yeah. Like, you listen to Bill Burr talk, and he believes a lot of the shit that... But he's fucking crazy. He's hilarious, but he's fucking crazy. And then if you offend somebody, he goes, I'm just kidding, you know? Which is awesome, because it's a safe way, it's a safe environment to talk about things that you shouldn't... You should be able to talk about anything, but things that cause a tension in the room, you know, like, not attention, but cause tension in a room.
Yeah.
It's an open forum to discuss those things. And what you do is you laugh at them, and then you go, I'd like to not have to laugh at these anymore. It's the same thing with, like, Jon Stewart saying, I'd love to not have to have my job.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I keep making fun of them, maybe again someday they'll correct their behavior and I won't need to do this anymore. And I feel like
clearly that didn't work, but yes.
No, right. No, it never will. It never will. But, I mean...
No, I totally get it, man.
And there are modern-day philosophers, dude. They're like, philosophy is stupid, because now if you're a philosopher and you're writing philosophy books, you're like, people are just going to call you an asshole. You're like, oh, some hoity-toity philosopher. I write. Like, when have you ever met somebody who's like, I'm a philosopher, and you're like, yeah, you are. It's like, the most recent one is like Albert Camus, you know what I'm saying? And he's been dead for years. But there's no, like, modern philosopher. Like, can you name one, you know?
No.
But how many, like, fucking... comedians can you name that have, like, actually, like, spoken and changed your view of the world?
Seriously.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
They're modern day philosophers. We are such a satirical and cynical community of people, you know, that we need that type of, like we need that type of direction with our...
Oh, definitely. And it needs to be accessible.
Yeah.
To bring back to Carlin, because everything in my life does.
Yeah.
As you remember, there was an interview where he kind of described realizing that in his own writing, that he's like, I saw this triptych that was like, there's three parts of this creative personality. He's right. Like, there's the jester,
mm-hmm.
who's just there to entertain you, get a laugh, and, you know, forget about your day. The second step is the philosopher. So if you are able to take that environment and add a little bit of commentary or some new ideas that they're not familiar with.
Yeah.
And the third part being a poet. So if you can do all of these things and do it with great, as he put it, with marvelous language,
yeah.
and tie all these things together in a way that's almost catchy, you know? And I think that's a really good way of defining, like, the great comedians,
yeah,
you know, is they have all of those qualities.
All three of them. You're absolutely right.
Man, if anyone can hear the background noise in this episode, I apologize. My wife isn't here right now to watch the dog, and he is just all over KI.
Is he going to hump me? Yep. He's going for it. Nope. He's going for it. Oh, I thought he was going. He was about to do it.
Yep.
I alpha'd his ass.
Fortunately, he wears a diaper, so he couldn't actually
Why
rub his
wear
dick
a diaper?
On you. Because he's just dumb, and he...
Like, that'd be cool if it was like a
trained
baby.
Him. Why we trained him to not. Yeah, right.
This is fucking stupid.
What an idiot. We trained him to not pee in the house.
Yeah.
When he was a baby. And for months, he was fine. Oh. He's trying. All right.
Dude, fuck that. Legalize it, dude.
So we trained him not to go in the house. And then after a few months, he was just like, what are they going to do? I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And he just started pissing and shitting on all the furniture and whatever. And he never stopped, ever. So we were just like, fine, we'll just strap this thing to your dick and you can pee on yourself.
He's like, I know you're talking about me. No, at first I thought, like, it was a girl dog and its vagina was falling out, because that happens to dogs sometimes when they go into heat, you know? And it looks like a blooming onion from the Outback Steakhouse. Genius. Is that what that's there for?
No, I put them in front of my amps and drum sets to dampen the sound, but we'll use it for a dog today.
Okay.
So, I wanted to get you in specifically to talk about next week is the 4-year anniversary of your private stock weekly at Lucky's, at the Architects.
K.I. and the Architects.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. No, but that's really, what it says in the paper.
I know it says that in the, on the website, too.
It's so funny.
But
they hate it.
I wanted to have you because you're the host of almost all of these things.
Right.
You guys have been at it for a really long time.
We couldn't do it without all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be impossible.
I've been there on nights when half the people couldn't be there, you know, and you're seeing totally different show from the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that get started? Because I remember when you were working at John Henry's and you were booking some of the shows, and then you went to booking pretty much all of the shows.
Yeah.
And like whenever someone was coming through, they were hitting you up.
Mm-hmm.
And you were nice enough to put me on shows back then.
Yeah.
Or if I had somebody coming through, help me get that together. And then when they closed, how much of a gap was there?
Well, we did the weekly there while I still worked there. So what happened was there was this band, Simplistic, which is now members of Soulseed, which is a popular Eugene-like reggae band, which we're pretty good friends with. You know, we do shows with them in Novato and stuff. I did work with this guy, Skylar, who rapped and played didgeridoo in the in Simplistic.
I'm not going to laugh.
Super nice guy. Very talented. I call it the didgeridon't.
Yeah.
But, so we did a lot of like live band stuff together. Like when they'd play, they'd call me and be like, hey, drop some verses. Let's mess around. So we started doing that, and they had a weekly there on Tuesdays, and they obviously couldn't keep up doing a weekly. Like they were one band and they were like, we have the same songs. We're like, we want a tour. We got a lot of shit going on. So they would call us in to fill in when they weren't there.
Mm.
And then eventually they just dropped it completely. And Lucky's asked us to take over the weekly. So it was on Tuesdays initially.
Yeah, I remember for the first year or so.
Year and a half or so. It was on Tuesdays. And then we switched it to Wednesdays. And that, you know, just kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. Maybe we just don't have anything else to do. But, like, I don't know how it's gone on this long. Honestly, it's pretty fucking amazing. And it's been a roller coaster ride. We've had, you know, really good shows, and then we've had some where we're like, yeah, this might be the last time we do it. But it's Eugene, and it's a fickle market, and it's small. And, I mean, it's pretty impressive to say any hip-hop weekly lasting any amount of time over a year in Eugene is pretty solid, because it just doesn't happen ever.
Everything has dried up. And
in
I
the
feel
history
like
of Eugene, we are the longest-running weekly.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it.
Like, even when hip-hop was popular here, you know? Like when Marv and all those guys and Metric and Animal Farm and Laffa and all those guys were doing weeklies, ours has lasted longer. And I'm not going to say it's better, but if it wasn't doing well, the bar wouldn't let us keep doing it.
For sure, yeah. You know? I mean, I think people have kind of figured out that that's where hip-hop is in Eugene.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's occasionally something at the Granary or the Wow Hall or whatever, but really, like, the only consistent place to see hip-hop in Eugene is Wednesday at Lucky's.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You guys are solely responsible, I feel, for keeping this even limping along, I think, really, because there's people like myself, there's people like, you know, Garen and Landon, we're all people that will throw our own shows from time to time, but we're also all people who are just very focused on our own shit.
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys go there and do it every single week is invaluable.
I feel like it's an ecosystem, and everyone's got a part in it. There wouldn't be touring acts without Home Staples. Because most of the places that people that tour from here play are weeklies in other markets.
Yeah.
And without the people running the weekly markets, there would be no place for the touring acts to go. So, I feel like it's an ecosystem, and each part is invaluable. Without touring acts, we wouldn't have a show.
Yeah, you'd be doing the same
thing. We'd be doing the same thing. So I look at it's mutually beneficial for everyone involved. So I don't think it's like it's us keeping it together, because realistically, without people like you bringing headliners and
sure.
people like Garen and people like Landon and people like all those guys doing what they do, we wouldn't have a place to house people. But the thing, the important thing for us that I think I found is that more so than ever, people are planning routes around Eugene to land on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
People would be like, I want to come there on a Wednesday. Not like, can you get me a Saturday show or anything like that, where it used to be like that and I'd have to mm-hmm. go, oh, we got Wednesdays. And they're like, eh. Now people are like, we will reroute our thing so that we can play there Wednesday and be in yep. Portland on Thursday or Friday, which says more than I feel like I'd like to pat myself on the back for.
No, that's real. I've had booking agents now hit me up
yeah.
and say, hey, I've got so-and-so coming through. We made sure it's on a Wednesday. Can yeah. you guys work it out? And I'm
yeah.
like, sweet, let's
it's
do
a thing.
It. You
yeah,
know?
It's a thing. And the thing is, we're also in a market where, you know as well as I do, it's hard to charge over $5.
It really is.
So a lot of the times, the rep of the Wednesday nights has gotten big enough to where we can give people small guarantees and then go a percentage of the door. And they go, yeah, okay. Whereas most people will be like, no, I want the guarantee up front. And we're not really in a position to do that most of the
yeah.
time, you know. But people have – the rep of the show has been like, yeah, when I played there, it was big. It was a good crowd. It was blah, 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 blah. So now those people are contacting us going, yeah, we'll do a door deal. Like Quell is like, yeah, I'll do it for a door deal, you know.
Yeah.
Because he knows he can get more than if he asks for like a blank amount guarantee. I'm not going to put his business on
sure.
blast, you
yeah,
know.
No.
But it, you could potentially make more. And the thing that I like to tell people is you're paid for your draw, not for your performance. If I paid people for performances, everyone
we'd all be rich.
We'd all be rich, but it's about your draw. And some people don't take that very well. They're like, well, we don't really have a draw there. We're going to rely on the local talent. It's like, well, then why do you think I'm going to pay you? You know, like somebody just said that. They were like, we want a $300 guarantee. I was like, how's your draw here? They're like, not very good. I was like, thank you for being honest. How do you expect to get people out? The local people. I was like, then why don't I give the local people $300?
Well, but like you said, it's all sustaining each other.
Yeah.
You know,
we're not making
when
money
I was,
off this.
When I was a kid and putting on punk shows.
Yeah.
I didn't know much, but just instinctively, I wanted to take care of these people who were coming some great
yes.
distance to play my little high school show,
right.
you know, with my friends' bands and stuff. And so it was always like, oh, okay, shit, we made, you know, $300 tonight. Like, here's $250 of it.
The
you
traveling
know?
Act
like,
is was, always going to get paid more.
Yeah, yeah, for
always.
Sure.
Always, but when they demand more, just off of an inflated sense of ego. Like that's
oh, yeah,
like
okay,
that's like me going, I'm driving all the way down to Arizona to play a show. Nobody's ever heard of me out there, but I want 80% of the door because no one's ever heard of me out there and I'm driving. You don't get paid for your driving. And just know that, like, if you play Lucky's on a Wednesday night with us and you come out and you don't make demands and have crazy expectations, you're going to get the majority of the money. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
You're going to because you traveled, and I'm not going to pay a guy who had to walk across the street. I'll pay him, but I'm not going to, you know, he'll get whatever, you know, we got a couple free drinks. Everyone
yeah.
gets a free, three free drinks, and which is more than we went on tour. Half the times we didn't get drink tickets and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like people are being taken care of. And a lot of the times I'll be like, yeah, sleep on my couch. We're not going to get you a hotel because we can't afford it, but you're more than welcome to sleep on my couch. If you feel like you are too big of an artist to sleep on my couch, politely go fuck yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
cause you're not, cause, or you wouldn't be hitting me up for a Wednesday show.
Now, that's a good segue. I wanted to talk about, the state of the scene is a lot more precarious than it was, a few years ago.
Sure.
And, you know, the fans just aren't coming out the way they used to. And so we're getting artists that, used to pack the Wow Hall hitting us up
yeah.
To do these little shows. So I just wanted to ask, what are some of your favorite artists who came through? Because we've had a ton that
yeah.
we co-produced,
yeah.
but I'm just
yeah,
curious
yeah.
out of everything.
Open Mike Eagle
yeah.
has been just, and not even as, because like when I first met him, I even told him, I was like, you do everything I don't like in hip hop.
I told him that too.
But I love it. It's like electronic and it's laid back and it's, it's so pleasing to my ears. And he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Such an incredibly nice fucking dude. And like one of the only dudes who's like on another level of music than I am and treats me like an artist and like an equal. Every time he sees, he remembers my face, he remembers my name, he does shakes my hand, he remembers like stories we told back and forth, you know, like he's like, I consider him like a homie in the scene. If you went up to him and went like KI Design, he'd go, yeah, I know KI Design, you know.
Yep.
And if I went open mic, yeah, I know open mic, you know. And that guy, not on like a starstruck level, but on like a I'm willing to vouch for that dude in any capacity. That is a fucking great dude and a terrific artist, and I've been stoked to have him every time I've ever played with him, which I played with him at John Henry's before. I've played with him at that one.
That shitty show. Me and Cross talked about that on the
That should be in Blueprint's book.
Last episode. Yeah, right. That was worst shows ever.
That was so painful, but that's what it is.
That's when I met him and was like, oh my God, this guy is
I remember you
so
brought it to my attention,
good.
And I was like, yeah, dude, fucking open mic is awesome. Yeah.
I didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. He just sent me an email like, yep. Hey, somebody referred me to you, and I was like, great, everything's booked.
Yep. Yeah, and also Quell from Typical Cats.
Yeah.
That was an incredible show, and obviously he's one of my top five MCs, so that was great. Micah 9 was incredible.
That's one of my favorite shows I've ever seen in the underground, let alone played. Like
fucking nut job. He's
his solo
so good.
Set was just
oh my God. Just I could he's like improv jazz for MCs.
Yeah.
Like just always on point. I've never seen him stutter without it sounding fucking smooth, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's so good. And I don't know, what else have we done? Blueprint. Obviously,
yeah,
fucking amazing.
Always
super talented. Abilities, every time those ability shows. I'm really sad that Gel and ability show fell through.
I know.
Because Gel is a super big influence on me. And, man, fuck, dude. Pretty much every show that we've ever booked together.
Yeah.
Or that you booked and brought to my attention,
always
you
good.
Know? Always
well,
good.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do any of that shit without you guys. And I don't know how.
You would. It would just be tougher.
I don't know how aware people are of what. Like how that shit goes down, because it's like, you know,
no, people are delusional about how that shit goes down.
Yeah, I don't know if they think that like you guys bring everybody through, or if I bring everybody through, or whatever. But it's like a total tandem.
I feel like every time we do that show, though, one of those shows, we're both always on stage, like just jacking each other off, going like, oh, and Take 92 and Sam and the Illusionist, we couldn't do this, they do this. And then you're like, oh, without the Architects, and it's just circle jerk.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we get that across.
I think we get it across, but I think I do feel like we get a little more accolades for it being the Architects' private stock. So people think we do more of it. But I mean, just watching it. Anytime a good show is happening there, there's a Take 92 van out front.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It's
or like
coincidental that we both happen to be on that bill at the same time.
No,
like,
no. The people that go there that are supporters of the night know when we're working together.
Yeah.
You know,
for
and
sure.
The random passerbys who fucking cares, they're in the door, they're paying our guarantee for those guys.
Yeah, and definitely.
God bless them. I don't care who they think. They can think fucking Mike Thrasher put it on for all I care, as long as that money's rolling in to keep them paid, you know?
Well, I just appreciate that you guys have always had the door open to me.
Yeah, man.
You know, even from, you know, the Samurai Duck shows where you guys make fun of us. And
I just made fun of you.
Okay.
Once. And it was because you were listening so intently. Do you remember that? I never made fun of you like
you
as an artist.
See, I didn't hear you guys make fun of me. I had people come up to me saying, dude, those guys are freestyling about you and they're talking shit. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go listen to them. And then I like walked up there.
Well, here's
like,
the thing.
What are they saying?
Doing hip-hop shows, as long as we'd been doing them at that point, because it had been a few years.
Yeah.
Guys that do that are listening, like that are like standing there listening, are usually at hip-hop shows not having anything good to say. There, you know,
oh,
you've been there.
I wasn't judging the fuck out of you. I was just like,
you were listening.
Like, wow, we finally got on one of these actual rap shows.
It was Ender, us, and you.
Yeah,
or me and you. It was Ender, me, and the Illusionist. That was the show, right?
That may have been after that, actually, because when we played, there was hardly anybody else on the bill. It was just like this really long freestyle night.
Oh, yeah, it was overflow.
Like, we walked in, and it was the people sitting at the bar were watching porn on big screen TV.
Yeah.
And then like we went up after the porn. I remember being on stage in between songs and everyone started cheering. And I look over and it's like, the money shot. You know, everyone's like cheering. I'm like, okay, this is weird.
You're lucky to have missed out on the World Flavor days.
No, I was there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there for that. I played my first solo set ever, actually, was there.
It was Overflow is really the predecessor and the groundwork for what the Architects and even the Private Stock Weekly is.
For sure. Yeah.
It laid the groundwork. It taught us how to go up there and just keep doing it. We had some of the funniest fucking things happen at Samurai Duck. Like one time this like, because we'd book whoever. We didn't fucking know. It was Sunday night in Eugene. If a guy said he wanted to get on the mic, we'd be like, you got a set? And be like, yeah, hop on up, you know? And there was this one guy. So it's a metal bar and it's dingy. So all the lights are red. And he was a Crip. So he refused to rap under red lights. So the bartender had to turn off the lights and let him rap in the dark because he was like gangbanging on the red lights. It was, and we're just laughing, you know? Because like in Eugene, there's not a lot of gangs. And so gangsters aren't really threatening because the reason gangsters are threatening is because of their numbers. And then when you don't have that, you're like, dude, calm down. You're in Eugene. They're red lights. Like, I understand.
Play
your
songs.
You're down for your set, but like, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking Jesus. That was so funny.
So before we wrap up, I have to ask you of the famous story. Are you willing to tell
the AC alone
bit?
I'd rather not get into particulars because we kind of squashed it at this point.
No, that's fine. We don't have to.
And next time he's in town, he said that we're going to battle. Well, he didn't say. I said, and he accepted.
Okay.
And yeah, let's just say he pushed the envelope a little too hard.
I did want to ask just in case because I think it's a funny story. And I've had people ask me like on the recent Blueprint shows.
Yeah.
The second day in Portland. Sitting there at the merch table, nothing's going on, just me and Print. He's on his phone and just like, I don't know where he puts it down. He goes, I just have to ask you this. It's been bothering me. He goes, is that shit about K.I. real? I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, Groove told me a story about AC. I was like, oh, that story. I don't know, man.
Let's get around.
Word travels.
Yeah.
I've had people ask me about it and it just always cracks me up.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it happened. I don't want to get some rep on your podcast of being a badass because I'm not.
No, but at the same time, I feel like don't take any shit at all.
If you fuck up in my house, I will not hesitate to. I had to do that last night. Some guy was performing last night, you know, and after he did his verse, he threw the mic on the ground. And I walked up there and I grabbed him and like without hesitation during the other person's verse. And I was like, if you do that again
during the song.
Yeah. And I was like, you respect this shit. The reason we have this weekly going this long is because we're not idiot fucking retard rappers.
Yeah.
And if you act like that, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you and you're going to go fucking home. You know what I mean? Because like the reason things get shut down is because you know how it is. Oh, like literally if people walk by and go, what's going on here? I go music. I don't go hip hop because it has a negative connotation. Not because hip hop is bad, but because like, every retard and their fucking cousin thinks they're a fucking rapper.
Yep.
And it makes all of us look bad. And I'm one for quality control. Even if it's somebody else's show, you know what I mean? Like that little fucking Crip dude I fucking chokeslammed and slammed his girl's drink out of his hand. That was like fucking with your brother. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, I've had enough
that
of this.
One. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, you're in my house. Fuck this shit, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, and people were just watching. Like you weren't around. You were like in the back. But I watched this dude like nuzzling up to him and being a dick and trying to get on stage. And people are just going, what the fuck is this guy doing? And I'm like, nothing now, you know? I'm going to get him the fuck out of here. And like, call me crazy, call me a dickhead, whatever. It gets the fucking job done. And
well,
like,
just from my punk rock days of when we would have regular venues that we would use, it would bounce around every 6 months because like then we would get banned from such
place.
And such place because so-and-so broke the mirrors and then they tagged whatever.
Yep.
And then there was booze in the parking lot, broken bottles and all this shit.
People need to respect the venue.
Yeah. And then we'd move it to another place and then that place would get shut down because there was fights. And so we had like, okay, well, so-and-so's on the blacklist.
Well, it's like when you throw
anymore.
A microphone, it's like, do you know how much that costs? No, you don't, because you can't fucking afford it. That's why you don't have one. So don't throw it, you know? Like, what makes you think they just, like, they're invaluable? You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter. They'll get you a new one. Like, who the fuck do you think? Any artist. If I watch famous comedians, like, drop the mic or anything like that, my initial thought is, what a fucking dick. Because that sound guy's sitting there going, ah, you know? And I'm like,
now I
be I'll, nice to the sound guy.
I'll admit I've done that, but I've only done that when I bring my own mic. And
Fair enough,
you're popping the speakers, and I know that's not the greatest thing. But when the Ill used to play, we had pretty crazy shit.
Yeah,
and I would throw my own thing sometimes. But
I have a weird thing about destroying other people's property. If it's yours, why the fuck not? Who cares? And if it's a part of like your thing, you know, go for it. But like. you're just some asshole. Like, that guy, you're just being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make you look cool. And yelling at the sound guy to turn up your monitors, and then having them phantom turn up your monitors, going, all right, buddy. And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. You're just saying that because you've heard rappers say it. You're a fucking asshole. You know nothing. If you've been doing a weekly, or you've been promoting shows or putting on shows, and you know nothing of the technical side, you're a dick.
Yeah.
If you don't know your sound guy's name, if you don't know how to plug in your own DIs, if you don't know how to do that shit, and you're a rapper and you're doing shows on the reg, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
The age of A&Rs and help and handouts and shit are gone. DIY, you know it. I know it.
Yep.
Even if it sounds bad, know what the fuck you're doing.
Or at least just respect the other people
for doing
enough
it.
To...
Like when people finish their sets and then immediately unplug.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Boom! And then the sound guy's like, what the... You fucking blow my speakers. These are QSCs. These each cost $1,400.
The first thing I do...
Mute the channel, please.
Hold my hand up to the sound guy. He raises his hand with the thumb up. Man, okay.
Unplugged. And seriously, about the weekly, we couldn't do it without Lucky's Club. So anyone listening to this, check out Lucky's. They are one of the only standing, independent venues that you're going to be on more than a 2-foot riser. You're going to have a dedicated sound man who's going to run your sound. You're going to have, you can bring a projector. We have a projector screen. We have all the stuff that people use nowadays where, like, most places, even if, like, hands up to them, Granary and stuff, you're not going to get that type of stuff. You know, like, I respect anyone letting us play.
There's a few good venues left, and when we talk about Lucky's, you got to think that this is a place when everybody else is closing down for the most part. What did they do? Not only do they
invest
all
more
this
money.
Stuff, but they throw a whole bunch of money in getting new sound, new stage, new lights, all that stuff.
And for local acts.
Yeah, and I actually just coincidentally met one of the owners last year, I believe, and it was right after all the new stuff went in there, and it came up that she owned the club, and I said, man, I perform there
all
regularly.
The time, yeah.
Yeah, I've played there so many times.
Oh, you probably shouldn't say that. I don't want her to cancel our night.
And I said, I'm just so grateful that we have a place to do that, and she said, absolutely.
Yeah.
We are... all about keeping the music scene thriving and
not only that, they always charge a door fee, and that's not for them. They'd make more money if they didn't. They refuse to not charge a door fee.
Yeah.
So like on a Wednesday, we're charging $2 to $3, mm-hmm. Five if we have a huge headliner, which paying $5 to see Blueprint, where does that happen? You know what I mean? That doesn't happen anywhere.
Yeah.
And they do that because they want us to get paid, and they don't want us to sell ourselves short. They literally will be like, no, we'll do it for free. And they're like, no, you won't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're going to charge, you're going to get paid for it, And they insist on doing that. They always give you drink tickets. They take care of you because they know it's an ecosystem, as opposed to you've even played John Henry's. When we played John Henry's, they didn't want you there.
No.
They didn't want me there. And I worked there,
Yeah.
Like, they're jaded and over it. And these guys have been nothing but committed and thankful. And like recently the other day, the manager, Summerfield, came up to me and was like, we need to renegotiate stuff, and if there's anything we can do to help, let us know. And I was like, first things we can do is change the drink specials because it's Fireball and Jaeger. And they did that as a joke, like, oh, trashy hip-hop crowd, let's give them Fireball and Jaeger, which is trashy drinks. And I was like, none of our crowd drinks that. So I just recently got it changed to a shot of Jim Beam and a microbrew, which is more our crowd, whiskey and good beer,
sounds about right.
So but it's like they're listening to us is all I'm getting at, is that
they're not putting up with you.
They like us there, and they want to work with us, and they're not like arbitrarily doing things. They're doing things with purpose and with feeling and with our best interests at heart. So I shout out to Lucky's and for holding us down as long as they have, and everyone that goes there and everyone that works there, and the sound guy Ponder, couldn't do it without him,
Yeah, great team. They've not only hosted us, but even let me film the anti-fun video there. We've done a lot of things.
Well,
there.
Not only that, it's funny because they were like a bluegrass jam band venue.
Yeah.
And then when everything collapsed at John Henry's, where all the punk shows went, where all the metal shows went, where all the hip hop shows went, they without hesitation went, bring it over here. And
Open
the negative
arms.
Connotation that Eugene has with hip hop shows.
Yep.
Because you get these fucking in their tree fort kids rapping over their vocals, booking shows, and then it gives us all a bad name. So, like, the thing that I feel like you and I have done, and the architects collectively together, illusionists, architects, is quality control.
For sure. Yeah, like, that's one thing I hear when I go on the road is, I started hearing this a lot last year, was like, man, I love coming to see you because even though I've seen you a bunch of times, like, I always know you're going to bring somebody, really good artists. Like, you guys just always put on shows with people I want to hear that I've never heard, you know?
Because in a scene, I learned this, like, working in the bars. If you come to my bar and I make you a drink and it's bad, you're not going, fuck that bartender. You go, fuck that bar.
Yeah.
If you go to a restaurant and the cook makes you something shitty, you don't go, fuck that cook. You go, fuck that restaurant. If you come to a hip-hop show and the opening act is rapping over his vocals and throwing the microphone and wearing sunglasses on stage and acting like a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
You don't go, fuck that guy. You go, fuck the hip-hop scene and you.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to go to another rap show.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the passive aggression, what I do is I listen to everyone's passiveness and then I tell the people. And the people that know I don't like them for a reason, and they don't sit around wondering why they're not getting booked. I let them know. I go, you're a fucking asshole. You look like a dick. You don't know how to rap yet. And we'll put people on that need practice, you know,
Their
heart and their head's in the right place, you know? And it's like, there in Eugene, there's this all you're trying factor where everyone is an artist. So you can get up there and be amateur as fuck. And nobody in places like in San Jose where I grew up, they'll fucking Carnegie Hall, fucking, you know, like Apollo Theater, get a cane and pull you off the stage, but get them boo you off the stage. When I did the Red Bull MC challenge and I stumbled over a few words and the crowd booed me until I stopped.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Never experienced that before, you know, but I'm not opposed to it.
But it's real.
It happened. And here people, oh, he's trying.
Yeah.
He's trying. Like, no, he's fucking embarrassing everybody. And he needs to know. So if people don't know what they're bad at, they'll never know what they're good at. And you need to tell people when they're bad. You know, and that's what I feel like my job is here.
I mean, ultimately, you are a producer of that show. You are not.
Yeah. It represents me.
You're not just the host of it.
Yeah.
You are a person who's trying to get people to come back to this thing on a regular basis. So,
yeah.
Of course, you're going to make sure that that bar is set.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like it should. And obviously, sometimes we drop the ball. Sometimes a whack motherfucker will squeak by on a tour somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, you can't control it, but I'll be sure to say something snidey when I go up and introduce the next guy, you know? We'll all do it. We'll let you know that we were not a fan of what you did, you know?
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, something like that, you know? If you rap over your vocals, the first thing we'll say is rapping over your vocals is fucking stupid.
Yeah. We talked about that last night, me and Gradient. That'll be, well, the next episode. He said his first rap, he performed at school in the class, and he had like a recorded hook.
Yeah.
And then he rapped over it, and I was like, yeah, good thing you don't do that anymore. He's like, well, you know, I still like to do the hooks because I just need to breathe. I was like, no, stop it.
Get breath control.
I was like, you work at it, and it'll be hard, and you won't do very well, and then that'll make you better.
Don't rely on technology to make your life easier when doing live performing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
Like, I mean, a little bit, but like when it comes to the actual performance of saying the words, like sometimes I have left like the hook on there, but I still voice over it because I want it to sound like a harmony. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I can't harmonize with myself.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying? So, but until then, I don't do it anymore, but I've done it, but I want to get one of those little fucking boxes.
Oh, like Lisa Vasquez.
Yeah, where you can click it and you can harmonize
with
yourself.
See, I'd so much rather that and have a live manipulation than anything pre-recorded like that.
Always.
You know?
But if you have a hook that is completely dependent upon the effects on the hook,
yeah,
and you can't do them, by all means. But you better be going over it and you better be like harmonizing with it. You better not just be tracking over it. You know what I'm saying? Like, or if like you got a hook where it's like Ebb, check one. When I flex tongues, like if you have in the beat, check one. Da-da-da-da-da-da, check two.
Okay.
You know, because that's not like, it's just you need the ping pong. You know what I'm saying? You need the pass off. And if it doesn't seem like a pass off, it's just going to look weird.
I could see that. I
so
don't know.
Sometimes.
I've pretty much gone extreme in the
as
other direction. Just that I just don't do it ever.
As have I.
And I feel like if I have a song that I
have to do that, you don't do it live.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, okay, maybe that doesn't need to be in the set. unless I have a guest to help me out with it.
My buddy Earl, Self-Destruct in San Jose, super tight producer, wins beat battles left and right.
Hmm.
Incredibly tight. I should put you in contact with him. He's fucking awesome.
And yeah, I'll be down there again this month.
He lived there. He lived here for a while. He like had dreadlocks and stuff. You may have met him. And he posted a thing on Instagram that was like, chop, 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 of a recording.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, this is somebody's vocals. This isn't called being a perfectionist. It's called cheating. And
yeah,
it is. If you can't perform it live and you need somebody to back you up the whole time, you're not doing you're not doing your job. Like, I credit myself for trying to sound or sounding like I do on record.
Yeah, yeah. It took me a long time to get that for myself.
Yeah.
Because on stage I was just jumping and yelling, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, you know, it took me a long time to figure out how to get that balance between the stage and the studio.
Yeah.
But you are a person, I think, specifically with breath control.
Sure, yeah.
That's just on another level. Like, I can tell you put in the work on that because, like, when you go up and do Domino Effect and some of those really long-winded, choppy stuff, like, you don't sweat. You can do that. You can walk up there and be stumbling in your speech
because I'm drunk.
Because you're so fucked up, like before the song, and then you play the song flawlessly. And I'm like, dude,
it's muscle memory,
dude.
Man.
But still, don't sell yourself short because there's songs that I've played a million times that are challenging to me.
Yeah,
and you don't let it show. So I respect that.
Thank you. You want to talk about breath control? Listen to Quell.
Mm.
Watch that dude live. It is like you can't even watch where he's taking a breath. And it never sounds like he's running out. Like, you never get that, like, push it like that thing. You never get that. It's just the first word sounds as crisp and as poignant and as, like, projected as the last word falling into the next first word. It's fucking incredible. It's crazy.
I honestly wish I would have paid more attention at that the first time he came through.
Yeah.
you had us on as the opener, and we just had so many friends there. I was like just all around.
You were just
night.
So popular, just, you know, getting people through the door, just being such a
famous guy.
You do have a fan base.
I don't know, man. My record release show this year was the worst I've ever had.
Did you do it at Lucky's?
Yeah, it was just an off night, man. But I make
the
a
famous
point.
Last words one.
Dude, that was,
it was,
I don't
slow.
Know. I was disappointed.
Yeah.
And that was a Chesky show too. Like, we did that and it was just not good.
Do you remember
and then the next day I saw him in Portland and it was packed and I was like, fuck, man, this is what we usually have for those kind of shows.
Yeah.
But,
it's going to be hit or miss, you know, and it's always going to be that way. People also don't factor in, like, they'll come and tour and they'll look, it's been busy, and then they'll come during summer and I'll be like,
yeah,
there's no fucking kids here. We live in a college town, you know, you got to factor that in. So
just want to remind everybody again,
September 2nd,
the 4-year anniversary of Private Stock with the Architects at Lucky's.
Yes.
So if you're in Eugene Wednesday night, that first, is it the 2nd or the 3rd?
The 2nd, September 2nd.
September 2nd.
Yeah,
so that'll
2nd.
Be the anniversary show at Lucky's.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're around, I'm gonna drop this ahead of time so you guys can hear this and check it out.
Thanks.
But
also, September 10th at Hi-Fi, we're opening for Eli.
Awesome.
From The Living Legends. So
awesome.
That's going to be a good one.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I hope you guys keep it going until 5. And
keep your eyes open. Eb1 and KI got their project almost finished. It's in the final stages. So
look at you getting
out.
All rapper on me.
It's going to be tight,
I was going to be like, yeah, is there anything else you want to...
Oh, sorry.
You know, it's already plugged.
You sound like my girlfriend. I just do that shit too much. She'll be talking, and I'll just cut her off, and I'll be wrong the entire time.
I was doing that to Gradient, and I was like, man, I need to be a better listener. And so hopefully I'll listen back to this episode and be like, all right, I didn't interject way too much.
You're talking to the guy that... I do that shit all the time. When Josh Finch interviewed me for that... Bartenders who are musicians thing.
Yeah,
in the weekly.
Paper.
It was like all me because I drank like 8 cups of coffee and went there, and these two girls are just like staring at me, like shut the fuck up. Even Josh called me and he's like, "Yeah, listen back. It's pretty much the KI show." So I'm sorry,
dude. That's what happens.
That's why I'm the host.
My friend Kellen, he was moved away. We used to hang out a lot. We're in a band, Dead Fucking Serious. And I called him up one time, and I was like, hey, dude, I saw you were in town. We should hang out, work on a song or something. And he's like, yeah, it's been a while since I've had a one-sided conversation.
Awesome.
I'm Like, fair enough.
I never see that. Well, maybe I'm just like overpowering, so I'm just listening to myself. But you've always been a good listener. You always listen. I mean, when I'm screaming negative comments at you, you're pretty understanding for the most part.
Well, I think it's hilarious. So
yeah. All right.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. Yep. Thanks for coming out.
Take 92 podcast.
Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah.
And again, I apologize for my fucking dog. He is driving me crazy. And
he's just a dog.
We'll find a better way to do this next time.
Put the diaper over his face.
There you go. Yeah. Muzzle. Thank you for checking out the Take 92 podcast. My name is Sammy Warmhands. This is my song Famous Last Words, produced by KI Design.
Sir, we'd like to ask you a few questions today.
Name in the rap game, attack like Bane, knock you down, prop it to your knees like back pain. But I couldn't pretend to fool you for a second that I'm the coolest around. I get lost in my own town, never go out, I'd rather stay at home, write a song, lay it down, play the demo on my phone. It's all I've ever known, selling CDs since 16, scratch that 14, this shit just fits me. A 14 needing, pleading for his place, feeding on weekly fixes of mixtapes. I'd come home from school, crank the distortion, noise to skill ratio way out of proportion, but it felt right, and it still does. I melt mics and I kill clubs, always making ill stuff. Filled up my living room wall with any and all of my favorite posters I'm hosting for y'all. And if you haven't noticed or I failed to mention, I slow roast opponents to answer the question. First name Sammy, last one standing, last known photo, first crash landing. Yo, I just dropped a new track, I got a video too. We got CDs and shirts in the back. Yeah, well fuck you too. One more time, I just dropped a new track. I got a video too. We got CDs and shirts in the back. Yeah, well fuck you too. As for the rest of you, suck on my motherfucking testicle. The day I leave rap, I'll even eat my vegetables. Shut up like we're stuck up in an ATM vestibule with the Victoria's Secret model laying next to you. Now I probably got the audience mad at me, so I'll set the record straight and clear it up like loratadine. What you're hearing is a strategy, managing sanity. The only way I actually know to keep from damaging my psyche. Otherwise it might be likely at inside a violent riot. People lined up to fight me like,
how many butts am I gonna have to cut before you people realize not to be dummies?
I'm through debating dudes complaining while hallucinating dudes that paying like a fucking Lucifer painting. Cause I'm a practiced athlete, lapped you at the fastest track meet and slapped your ass back to last week. Kicking anus, I'm heinous like that. Famous last words, I'll be right back. I just dropped a new track. I got a video too. We got CDs and shirts in the back. Yeah, well fuck you too. One more time, I just dropped a new track. I got a video too. We got CDs and shirts in the back. Yeah, well fuck you too.